The Triathlon Show 339. Hey, what's up everybody, and welcome back to another episode of That Triathlon Show, the podcast presented by scientifictriathlon.com. I'm your host Michael, and on today's episode we have part 2 of my interview with Michael Lieberson. In case you missed it, last week we discussed road bikes versus tri bikes, and when it's worth to upgrade to a tri bike, or rather how much time you stand to gain over specific distances when upgrading from a road bike to a trial bike, as well as considerations for racing on hilly courses. When might it make sense to choose one bike versus another, how to set up your TT bike optimally if you race a hilly race with a TT bike, and so on. So go and listen to that if you haven't already, and if that topic interests you. In today's part of the interview, we discuss the currently available options on the aero sensor and aero testing market, how they differentiate from each other, and what's to come in the future with new sensors and improvements of the currently available options. Michael was previously on the podcast last year in 2021 to discuss this topic, but I wanted to bring it up again because aero testing to me seems like the next big frontier. If it's not here already, it's the next big one. So staying up to date on what's going on is really important in my opinion. We already see in the pro fields how more and more pros are really getting super dialed. They are very scientific with testing and so on, and very aerodynamic compared to even 3 or 4 years ago. And I think that this shift is going to move on to the top end of age group racing as well very, very soon, if it's not here already. So that's why I took the opportunity to chat about this topic again with Michael. So I hope that you enjoy this. But before that, big thanks to our sponsors, Precision Fuel and Hydration, that you can find on precisionfuelandhydration.com. One thing that I haven't mentioned so much recently is that on precisionfuelandhydration.com, you can find a lot of athlete case studies from both pro athletes that use Precision Fuel and Hydration and also age group athletes from different sports, including triathlons, of course, but also marathon running, cycling races, ultras, and all sorts of different case studies. So you can see, you can even filter by conditions, if it's hot or cold or hot and humid and so on. You can filter by high or low sweat sodium concentration. So the case studies is a really useful section on the PH website to get an idea of how athletes are fueling their races. And especially, of course, when you see athletes winning their races, then you can at least have an idea that, okay, so their fueling and hydration strategy was not bad at least. So that can give you some insights into how to plan your own fueling strategy if you know that you are also, for example, a salty sweater and you're also doing a hot and humid race or whatever the case might be. As a listener of That Triathlon Show, you can get 15% off your first order of fueling and hydration products on precisionfuelandhydration.com by using the code TTS22 at checkout. And thank you to Zen8. The Zen8 Indoor Swim Trainer is a swim bench that helps you improve your technique through an early catch. It helps you maximize propulsion through a more powerful stroke, and it helps you stay consistent by doing swim workouts at home even when you can't get to the pool. It's available in the UK, EU, and US, and has free shipping in both the UK and the US. It is very affordable, similar to a pair of running shoes, and best of all, the investment is risk-free. If you're not in love with the Zen8 Trainer after 2 weeks of using it and their free program, you can send it back and get a full refund. Learn more and get a 20% discount on your swim trainer on zen8swimtrainer.com/TTS. Now, without any further ado, here's part 2 of my interview with Michael Lieberson. And we're back with another part 2 of our interview with Michael Lieberson. Michael, welcome back. How are you doing?
Michael, I'm doing very well. Thank you very much again for having me back.
Yeah, so let's continue with the second topic that we want to discuss today. And for listeners that missed last week's episode, we discussed road bikes versus tri bikes, so you can go and listen to that if you didn't already. But today I want to discuss aerodynamic sensors, which I know that you've done a lot of interviews about, and you have a lot of personal experience testing, working with clients with them. So first of all, maybe just give a definition for listeners that might not even know what we're talking about. What is an aerodynamic sensor?
Sure. So obviously, and go back to listen, plus one for going back and listening to the road versus try conversation that we just had. But I think most of the listeners to your show, Michael, appreciate the importance of reducing aerodynamic drag in cycling, and especially in triathlon, where you're, you know, it's just you against the wind. There's no drafting happening in most of the triathlon disciplines that we participate in. And, you know, in that battle against the aero drag, we have a few tools. One that's probably been around the longest has been the wind tunnel, which is, of course, very expensive and time consuming, and very few people, short of professionals or folks with very deep pockets, have access to the wind tunnel in order to optimize their aerodynamic position. There have been some really interesting computational fluid dynamics. So these are computer models that that folks have used to ascertain the aerodynamic drag of a body, in this case a cyclist and his or her bike, and try to optimize that position. So my co-host Andrew Buckrell, when he was with Stack, he developed one of the early ones called the virtual wind tunnel. There's a system from Swiss Side as well. They have CFD. There's a few other packages out there. And then the final one, the one that we're going to talk about today, are these field aerometers or aero sensors. So this is a device that you would strap onto your bicycle. And what it tries to do is, in a nutshell, it measures airflow. And then it talks to a whole number of other sensors on your bike, or maybe sensors that are built into the unit itself. And what it's trying to accomplish is it's trying to calculate what your aerodynamic coefficient of drag, your CDA, is, and then allow you to make decisions about how you want to either change your position or change your equipment to, again, become a more aerodynamic and therefore either faster cyclist or a cyclist who can hold the same speed with less power.
Yeah, and there are a few different use cases for this, right? So there's the use case of potentially being able to use it in real time and maybe seeing if something happens, something changes in your position. But maybe right now, from what I understand anyway, a perhaps more relevant use case and more important use case would be testing different equipment, different setups or configurations, and trying to control for as many factors as you can, and then make informed decisions about those equipment choices and position and configuration choices that you might want to make to become as aerodynamic as possible. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think that's very much correct. In fact, we, if I may plug the most recent episode, actually depends on when this comes out, Michael. So one of the more recent episodes of our podcast, the Endurance Innovation Podcast, which we did with JP Ballard, who's the founder of Swiss Side, his hot take was that there is no such thing as live CDA. So there's no such thing currently as the ability to give you a number that tells you what your aerodynamic drag is, you know, right now. So his caveat on that was that, and I couldn't agree with him more, and he knows much more about this than I do anyway, is that you can do it if you have, as he calls it, a tail of data. So if you have, you know, historical data for at least the last 20 seconds to more comfortably the last 60 seconds. So you can't get live CDAs, like this is your CDA right now. And I can get into why that is. But you can get a pretty reasonable number if you want to say this is your last CDA for the last 20 seconds, or an even better, you know, more confident, let's say, number if you say this is your CDA for the last 60 seconds. So that, I think, is coming. I do believe that that is possible. I have not used a device so far, and to be honest, I haven't used all that many of them, but we'll get into that in a minute, that can do that today. But I do think that those devices that can give you a repeatable, honest number in, let's say, the 60-second window are probably within 12 to 24 months away.
Interesting on that note that his hot take that there's no such thing as live CDA. I think he was a guest on your podcast, but I can't remember who it was, that also said that there's no such thing as my CDA or your CDA. Like, you can say that my FTP is 300 watts and my CDA is 0.220, because CDA depends on so many factors. So the hot take that I heard was that, yeah, that's the case. You no person has one CDA. Would you agree with that?
100%. So the reason that's the case is Even if you are excellent, like an excellent experimental designer, and by this I mean you can hold all other things very, very constant. Let's say you can, you know, you're always riding on the same road, or you've tested on your race course, which is best case scenario, and you have, you know, your tire pressure is perfect. That and it's it. Well, by perfect, I mean it's repeatable. Your tires are in the same kind of shape, and you're excellent at holding the same position, and you're wearing the same kit, of course, riding the same bike with the same bottle setup, et cetera, et cetera. If the wind is doing something different, your CDA is completely different, because the apparent CDA, the what you, the rider, experience is immensely affected by the wind, and not only the wind strength, but obviously the wind direction as well, right? So, I mean, the trivial case is, okay, riding into a headwind is hard and riding with a tailwind is easy. You know, no one's going to win the Nobel Prize for saying that. But if the wind changes direction, even a little bit sometimes, even from, you know, if the effective yaw of the airflow, so this is the direction that you as a rider experience the airflow, right? So it takes into account the wind speed, wind direction, plus your speed as a cyclist. If it goes from, let's say, 5 degrees to 15 degrees, which is not a huge difference, it can have a massive difference in your CDA, right? So even if the wind changes a little bit, or the road turns a little bit, or, you know, and a classic example would be if you make a 90 degree turn, your CDA is completely different. Right. Unless it's a perfectly still day. If it's a perfectly still day, then your CDA is, you know, roughly the same. Let's say it's the same. But if there's a wind that's not very, very slow, you know, a reasonable wind speed, turning 90 degrees completely changes the angle the wind hits you, and it completely changes your CDA. So yeah, that I wouldn't even call it a hot take anymore. That's not controversial. That's just like, yeah that's just physics.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. So maybe you could say that you have a wind tunnel CDA, but that's if you repeat the experiment.
And that's why wind tunnels, when they present their, you know, when manufacturers present their data, they'll give you a sweep, right? They'll give you, you know, at whatever stated speed is, usually 30 miles, 50 kilometers an hour, which is, you know, pretty quick, unless you're a professional time trialist. That they'll give you a sweep from usually from 0 to, you know, 15 or 20 degrees of yaw. So they'll tell you how you'll be performing throughout all of these. And usually they're saying like, look, they're trying to say we are faster than anybody else. But if you are trying to make some decisions about what your fastest setup is, it's important to understand that the wind direction is going to make a difference.
All right. So let's get on to the aero sensors. Which ones currently exist on the market already available for purchase? And which ones would you say are close to release, is still in development, but fairly getting there?
Sure. So the ones that we know for sure are available. So the first one on the market, and probably the one one of the sensors that kicked this all off was Noscio. They were a spinoff of Argon, a brand out of Quebec, a cycling brand out of Quebec. And they were the first sensor on the market. They were the sensor that I first purchased and that I have some experience with, although not in the last 18 months, but I have used it in the past. I know a lot of very smart folks who do use it. So that is one sensor. Another sensor that is on the market now, and that sensor is targeted to end users. So anyone can go on their website and buy a sensor, and I believe they're available currently, and they can have a sensor in their hands fairly quickly. Another Canadian company called Aerolab. These folks are out of Calgary. Another former guests of our show. Their product is their business model is different. So theirs is designed more at teams or coaches or bike fitters. And the idea there is that as a fitter, you would get this device with a lot of support from Aerolab, and then you would run, you would build it into your business model. So the big thing about Aerolab, and I haven't had any firsthand experience with their sensors, partially because of this point, is that they're very expensive. So I think I believe the Noscio product, the latest price I saw from them was $600, I believe. Don't maybe quote me on that. Maybe check out their price on their website. But Aerolab, when I saw their prices before you had to send them an email and find out what their prices were, their prices were much, much higher than that, because they were, again, designed at the professional user rather than the end consumer. There's another company called Ghibli out of Canada as well. I believe they're based in the East Coast in Nova Scotia, and they have a sensor that's ready, and they were testing it, and I think they got caught up in the chip shortage in the last couple of years. So their product is going to be available, they say, you know, any day as soon as they figure out their supply chain issues. So they're another product that is available. And as far as I know, those are the only ones that you can, well, you can't buy Ghibli yet, but, Aerotune and Noshio are the only sensor products that you can go out and buy currently.
Sorry, Aerolab. Did you say Aerotune?
Yes. I misspoke. Aerolab. Aerotune is on my mind because they are a sensor-less product, which I think we can talk about a little bit later, but yep. They are also available. So they're an option. They don't currently have a sensor. Now, interestingly, they are developing a sensor. I don't know when that sensor will be available for purchase, but they do have one in the works.
Yeah. And are there any other sensors that you're aware of? I think one is called Body Rocket or something like that out of UK, I believe that is, but I don't know anything about the state of it.
And there are some others. I've looked through their website. I don't either. They have some really interesting ideas. I think they've got sensors that are located in multiple locations on the bike, so they're not just looking at a sensor in free air. Generally, these sensors, you want to place them in the cleanest air possible. By clean air, this is kind of the air that first hits your bicycle. Right. So you don't want to put a sensor on your seat tube because there are all sorts of upstream elements of both the human body and the bicycle that affect the airflow at the seat tube. So you want to put the sensor in free air. But Body Rocket, and I have no idea what they're doing because I've looked through their website, but I don't know. I haven't seen any research on what they're up to. But they have more than one sensor. So it's an interesting approach. They might have a really interesting solution. I just don't know much about them. I know Swisside, who are very well regarded company in the cycling aerodynamic space, coming from Formula One. They've been developing a sensor for many, many years, and we just had JP Ballard on our show, who is the CEO of Swisside, and his position on the sensor was, we'll release it when we think it's perfect or it's ready, let's say. So I suspect that sensor is coming soon, but I do not know. The one from Aerotune, like I said, so they have a sensorless model currently that's available to the public. But they are also working on a sensor that is coming out in the near future. Also, I think, you know, companies are always cagey about release dates because, you know, you never know. But I know they do have prototype sensors that they've tested in the wind tunnel and in the field with, well, according to them, very good results. So that's another one I'm looking at. There's also a company called Streamlines, and they were spun off from VeloSense.
Streamlines were spun off from VeloSense. While you looked that up, I looked up the Noshio aerometer pricing, and it is indeed $600 or $599 with free shipping. So let's maybe focus on the ones that are currently on the market, which is basically Noshio and Aerolab, which is only for fitters and teams, and maybe those that are very close. It sounds like the Ghibli one might be really close. Also, based on, I listened to your interview a few weeks ago. By the time this episode comes out, how do these different sensors differentiate from each other? Can you give an overview of that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, so at the end of the day, they're all trying to capture the same thing, right? They're trying to give the cyclist a CDA value, right? And if I can circle back to where you started this conversation, Michael, about live CDA versus testing, let's put a pin in the live CDA. Let's say for now it's not reality, but the testing element, I think, is really a useful use case and something that is possible to do with current technology. So very briefly, it's where you would design an experiment. You would say, okay, I'm trying to figure out if helmet A is faster than helmet B, or if position A is faster than position B, or, you know, choose any other thing you want to change on your bicycle or on your setup, and you want to test which one is the fastest under those conditions. So in that scenario, any of these devices or these services is trying to tell you, it's trying to do a few things. So it's trying to give you a CDA. which is, you know, the coefficient of drag times area for that particular setup on that particular day, as we talked about. But also, even I would say even more importantly, to identify the magnitude of the delta, of the difference between two setups or two choices of equipment. So that's what they're trying to do. In how they do this, what makes aerodynamic testing very challenging is the effect of all the stacking of errors. So, to understand what I'm talking about here, we'd have to rewind a little bit and just have a quick primer on, how aerodynamics plays into, or why aerodynamics is important to cycling. So, I hope you can bear with me for sure. A little bit of a digression here. So, you know, as a cyclist, you're putting power into the pedals, you know, that power is turning your transmitted to the back wheel. The back wheel is what makes you go. So there's a few things that are holding you back when you're at, when you're riding your bike. The first one, and the one we can most easily cross off, is acceleration. Obviously, when you need to accelerate, you need to add more power. Acceleration is a very important thing to be able to capture, but it's one that we can, if we're riding fairly steady state, we can sort of cross off. The next really big one is changes in elevation. So anytime you let's say you go up a hill, you're adding potential energy to the system. And the system in this case is you plus your bicycle. So in order to add potential energy into the system, you got to put it in from somewhere. And in this case, again, it's coming from you, from the metabolic energy that's consumed inside your body and then turned into mechanical energy by your muscles. And obviously, again, as anyone who's ridden up a hill knows very well, going uphill is harder than riding on flat roads. So that's the energy going into the system. So that's another component that we have to either measure or calculate. Then you have rolling resistance, right? So that's the energy required to overcome the resistance of the interaction between your tires and the ground. And this is actually, it's not a massive magnet. The magnitude of this resistance isn't massive, at least on good tires, but it's quite complicated because it used to be thought that, you know, higher pressure is always better, but that's no longer the case because there are two components to rolling resistance, and I'm not going to go down that road. Suffice to say, we have to understand what rolling resistance is and we have to account for it. And then the last one, which is probably the easiest one to deal with, is drivetrain drag, right? So how much mechanical losses are you experiencing in transmitting power from your foot down to the pavement and the rear wheel? So there are some, you know, they're there, but they're somewhere in the 2% on a very efficient drivetrain, and the sometimes even below 2%, but as high as, you know, 5 or 6% or even higher if you're on a rusty commuter bike, you know. So it's something that we need to capture, but at least it's very repeatable from test to test. So those are the things: acceleration, changes, elevation changes, the effects of rolling resistance, the effects of drivetrain, and the fifth one is aerodynamic drag. So we're trying to calculate aerodynamic drag, but in order for us to, we know what power in is because we have a power meter, right? So obviously power meters are required to do this testing. So we know what power in is. We know how fast we're going. So in order to figure out what are all the things that are holding us back, we have to account for all of those other four things in order to calculate the fifth thing, which is aerodynamic drag. And so in order to calculate all those other four things, there are sensors. So there are things that we have to measure or calculate. And the sensors that are allowing us to measure all of those other things, they come with errors, right? And sometimes they're very good and sometimes they're less good. And if you're coming down, if you're making a claim as an aero sensor that, oh, look, we're going to give you a wind tunnel accuracy. So that's within, I think, usually like 2%. We're going to give you 2% accuracy on our calculation, or 1% accuracy on our calculation, which is what you need. I think you kind of need like, it's 1% accuracy that you need or better if you're going to have the resolution to choose between helmets or to choose between skin suits. Like sometimes the difference is bigger, but sometimes it's quite small. You need a very accurate, you know, and repeatable value for your aerodynamic drag. But if all of the other components that fit into that power formula, all of the other losses that are measured by other sensors that are not very accurate, then the stacking of the errors between all of your other sensors can sometimes completely obfuscate what you're trying to measure. Does that make sense, Michael?
That does make sense. And that's why one of the reasons that some or a lot of aerometers. Well, not a lot. There's not a lot out yet.
Too many out there. Yeah.
But for example, the use of speed sensor is required with at least a Notio, and I presume that that's because they just consider it more accurate than the GPS. Although in your recent interview with the guys from Ghibli, they said that they'd figure out a way to make a really accurate GPS with some filtering as well for bad data. So yeah. It seems to be coming. But yeah, it's just it makes sense. You need to control for those errors and minimize those errors from different sources.
Yeah, and so it seems like an impossible task. If on the one hand, that if you have, you know, we had this calculation in our first conversation with JP Ballard, where if each one of those sensors has a 1% error, and you have, let's say, you have a speed sensor, because you need a speed sensor because you need instantaneous acceleration data. GPS lags, right? So GPS is good for capturing distance and capturing average speed, but it's not very good. I would say it's very not good usually for capturing, you know, acceleration and deceleration. Now, when you're doing a test, you're trying not to do this, but it's going to happen from time to time. So that's why a wheel speed sensor is important. The hardest one to solve, and this was in our conversations with Mark Graveline, who was one of the initial engineers on Notio, the hardest challenge to solve is elevation. Because even fairly minor changes in elevation, because of the outsized influence, especially on a heavier rider, of the that potential energy sink when you're riding, having very accurate elevation data is essential. And so getting elevation right is very, very tricky, because currently what do we use? We use barometric altimeters. So these altimeters, first of all, they drift. So that means the data can change over time, even if you're not going up a hill. And anyone who's looked at their elevation profile, even with the best cycling computers or running watches with barometric altimeters, know that sometimes you get complete nonsense data. And if you need highly accurate data to get your aerodynamic data, you know, pulled out of the whole equation, any error in your elevation is going to blow you up. It's going to make your aerometer a random number generator. So it's just not going to be a useful device. So it seems like an impossible problem. And the way that all of these people who are much, much smarter than me are solving this problem is through software, right? It's through using some sensors to verify other sensors. For example, barometric altimeters can use IMUs, which are the sensors that can detect angle and movement in angular rotation in three axes, as well as movement in three axes. So those little IMUs can be used to error correct your barometric altimeter, and vice versa. So if you can come up with a very clever algorithm to do this, you can actually solve this problem. And this is why creating a good aerometer is very hard. And this is why I think, you know, JP Ballard and his team are taking so long to come out with one, because it's not a trivial program. It's not a trivial problem. So to answer your question, and I'm sorry it's taken like 20 minutes to get to one answer, but to answer your question, Michael, of what the differentiation is between the different models, I think it's the ability to do proper error handling and to give you like useful data. Right, to be able to do what they're claiming that they can do.
Well, Michael, I'm very impressed that you still remember the question.
I was coming back to it eventually.
Yeah, that's good. And with the elevation, one interesting aspect that I know that the testing protocols of some of these sensors use is to just do an out and back, so that you finish at the same place that you started, which kind of simplifies the problem a bit. But then again, that if that's required, then that kind of invalidates any other use outside of controlled testing. So
yes,
okay. So they're not super different. That's good. Then let's move on to which sensors do you personally have experience with, and what has that experience been like?
Yeah. So the only sensor that I've actually used has been the Notio, and the Notio in good conditions is quite a reasonable sensor, provided that you can double check that the elevation checks out. So again, it's been about 18 months since I've used the Notio, and when it first came out, it was very let's say rough. You still had to use a lot of post data analysis. They had a custom plugin into Golden Cheetah, which if you're familiar with, it's kind of like a WKO product. So it's like an advanced cycling analytics platform. So you had to import import the data that you got from the Notio into Golden Cheetah and then actually do the virtual elevation, the Chung method analysis in order to arrive at a CDA. Then they went to a more of an app model where you know, you do the test, you sync the device with your phone, and then the phone would spit out a CDA for you. And I got reasonably repeatable data from that. I've heard from other folks that you still have to be quite careful with the elevation. That folks were still going back into Golden Cheetah and just double checking to make sure that the elevation, if they were doing an out and back test, would zero out, which is obviously important if you're, you know, finishing where you started. So I think Notio is a fairly useful product, and it's become the UI on it has become pretty reasonable. Like it's quite straightforward to use with the app. Personally, I have a lot more experience, and with other folks, like folks who I've tested using the Aerotune platform. And Aerotune is a sensorless platform at this point. As I said, they are developing a sensor, but it's not currently available. So Aerotune just uses speed from your speed sensor, power, elevation data, and they don't actually measure wind velocity. And what they do is the way they overcome their inability to measure wind velocity, because they don't have a wind sensor, is just repeated passes of the same stretch of out and back terrain in order to reduce the error signal. So they just that's the way their algorithm works. I think it works rather well if you can set up the experiment correctly. And the trick with using Aerotune well is having quite a flat, smooth stretch of road that has minimal traffic, and that's really the challenge. And to your point, the point you made earlier, that is rather limiting in terms of its application. But if you have that available to you and you're interested in testing, Aerotune has an excellent UI and UX, and actually quite a bit of guidance on how to do these tests well. And when set up correctly, Aerotune can be used very effectively to do an aero test. Again, with a very big proviso of you having the access to the right kind of testing route.
Yeah, and another advantage of using Aerotune would be that it's very affordable.
Oh yeah, it's great. You pay, I believe it's 20 or 20 euro a month, and you can basically test as many times as you want in that month.
Yeah, 25 per month, I believe.
So, yeah, okay. Yeah, 20 might be the coach price. Yeah,
possibly. Well, one thing with the Aerotune sensorless system, then I assume that you would also have to either, depending on, well, I guess when you get efficient, you can do you can do a test with a couple of setups, and you can be done fairly quickly. But mm-hmm. if you're trying a lot of different configurations and you have to do multiple passes with each configuration, then the wind might change over the course of that time that you're testing. Let's say you're doing a 2-hour testing session.
Yep.
That might not be necessarily ideal for that type of system. Or can it handle that sort of change in wind?
No, so absolutely. So the way it handles, so it, you're absolutely right. It's not ideal because, as we talked about earlier, yeah, when the wind changes, your data changes. So if you're trying to do, you know, an ABCD comparison, and then the wind conditions have changed, then you have to be very careful about interpreting those results. So one thing that Aerotune does is it reports the error, and it reports the calculated wind conditions for you. And so if, you know, and there's guidance in the how-to guides of, okay, if the wind changes by more than, so yeah, you make a very good point, Michael. And, so Aerotune reports the wind, the apparent wind speed and direction. And the guidance is if it's greater than X, and I forget what X is, that you want to disregard those results, or you want to retest your base conditions again. But this would be the case with most other aerometers, unless they have, you know, well, I'm going to take that back. With aerometers that can very accurately measure wind speed and direction, then you can avoid this issue. But to give you a practical example, depending on how much time you need to actually make changes to the bicycle itself. Like, for example, if you're changing only clothing or helmets or hydration settings, hydration setup, and so you don't actually have to do a lot of wrenching, a lot of like front end adjustments, in a testing session of 4 hours, it's very possible to do, you know, get good data on 5 or 6, maybe even 7 or 8 setups. It just depends on how much riding you're willing to do as the athlete, as the test subject.
Yeah, for sure. And it sounds like, what is the reason? Because it sounds like you're preferring AirTune at the moment, the sensorless system compared to Notio. What is the main reason or the main reasons for that?
Yeah, so I mean, it's a little bit of, you know, when you're the hammer, everyone's a nail, and it's just my experience with. I have far more experience with AirTune than I do have with Notio, but the big reason is that I've dug into the guts of the AirTune system, and I've had many conversations with their founder, Sebastian Schlierike, and I just have a lot more confidence in the end results than I would with the Notio system. And primarily it's because at least the last time I looked into the Notio, the elevation correction was not done very well. So there are still cases where I've done out and backs and I've had, you know, my ending elevation has shown up as being different than my starting elevation. And because of, again, the outsized role that elevation plays in this experimental setup, that erodes my confidence in that system.
Yeah, no, it would for sure. Would you recommend for athletes that are interested in testing aerodynamics and going down this line, who would you recommend doing it for? What type of athlete would that be? And what sort of conditions would need to be in place, for example, access to a good road and so on?
Mm-hmm. I think I think this would be useful for anyone who's curious, right? So just like any kind of, I would advise people to treat it like an experiment, right? Just to see what you, and with any good experiment, you'd want to have a good idea of what you're trying to learn and what questions you're trying to answer, right? So are you you're just trying to become, you know, as aerodynamically optimized as possible, for example, or do you have specific things that you want to see? Like, is this position faster than another position? So anyone who is curious, who has that question in mind, I think is a good candidate for aero testing. With aero testing, the caution I would offer for people who want to do it themselves is to be patient, because it is actually, it's at least at this stage of sensor development or platform development, it's not super easy to get right. So you kind of have to do a lot of things right in order for the results to make sense and to be actionable. So with that in mind, anyone who has the time and the patience, I would say it's great to play around with, because there are things that you learn that you never thought really, you know, played much of a role that actually end up playing quite a substantial one. For example, like, you know, sometimes hand position or something that I learned in testing myself and others is, and I sort of knew that this was important, but I didn't know just how big of a difference it made, is head position. So just how you hold your head on the bike makes a massive difference for a lot of people, not everyone, but for a lot of people in how, you know, how quickly you can go for the same amount of power. So I think anyone can benefit from it, provided that they have that, you know, they're coming at it from a place of curiosity, and they have the patience to learn, you know, to learn the nuances and to do to give the tests the time that they need to be carried out, at least at present, because again, the technology is still very much maturing.
Yeah. And what would you say, what would your recommendation be for that type of athlete at the current moment? Would you recommend going for AirTune sensorless testing, or perhaps investing in a Notio, or would you even potentially recommend waiting for one of the sensors that might come out any day now and that you are excited about, that might have improved upon the currently available options?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. So I don't think that there's a sensor on the market right now that I would be super excited to recommend. Okay, so there's definitely a couple that I would love to get my hands on. I know Ghibli offered to let me try theirs when it's ready, and I'd be definitely keen to see how well that sensor stacks up against against AirTune, for example. I know Mark Graveline is working on his own little gizmo, his two-man development project. Probably the two that I'm most excited about are the sensor from AirTune, because again, they have a very well-developed platform already, which I think it could dovetail very nicely with, and also the sensor from Swisside, because they've spent more time developing a sensor than I think anyone else out there. So I'm really curious to see how good that product is when it comes out. But currently that leads me to say there is no sensor out there that I would, you know, wholly trust. But the beauty of AeroTune is that it's just so inexpensive and approachable, right? So in order to use the AeroTune platform, all you need is a power meter and, a little digression. You would want a dual-sided power meter for this study. I'm a big fan of single-sided power meters just for, you know, cost effectiveness. But in this case, you'd want a dual-sided power meter so that you're actually getting actual power rather than, you know, left leg times two power. You need a power meter, you would need a speed sensor, and a Garmin head unit. And that's really all you need. And most of us already have all or almost all of those things. And then you're paying €25 a month and you can go out and test, provided of course you do have that, you can find, that stretch of road. Now they have options for as short as 500 meters for a stretch plus a couple hundred meters on each side. So let's say 800 meters, total clear roadway, upwards of 1400 meters. So if you can find a stretch of road like that in your community, or that's not super far from you, then it's a very kind of low barrier to entry way to experiment with aerodynamic testing. And even just doing some very basics, like just see what your number is. You go out there and ride it, try to hold a steady position, steady speed, and see what that number is. And then you might be surprised. You might be, you know, most people who haven't done any optimization usually have quite a bit of room to improve. And then you can also, you know, you get a number, you compare it to some of the other folks on the platform, and you can say, huh, I'm already really fast. I don't want to invest very much more time or money into doing this, or not fast, but aerodynamic. Or you might learn, like I learned the first time I did, I was like, huh, that doesn't look very good at all. I have a lot of room to improve. And then I want to improve, because you can save some real time in races by improving your aerodynamic performance here.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting aspect of their platform that they have, that you can kind of, I haven't seen a lot of it, but I have used the metabolic testing a bit. So I do mm-hmm. know that they have that social aspect, seeing what other people are doing and what test results other people have and so on. So that's interesting.
Yeah, if you can choose to share your data, right? So there's a lot of power users on there, or people who are, you know, who are just like interested in the community, and they will always share their results. And so sometimes they're a little bit like, wow, holy smokes, how the heck did you get that low?
Yeah.
So you have to be, you know, you kind of have to leave your ego at the door when you look at some of these results. You can, and they're always willing to answer questions too. So for example, if you were, you know, you can run a test and your number is whatever your number is, and you can say, and you can also take photos, which you can attach to your report, and you can post those photos, and then people will give you free advice, you know, advice that you could pay hundreds of dollars for, even, you know, upwards of thousands of dollars for. You can get free advice here, and I would say it's, you know, most of the advice is going to be pretty reasonable on this forum here.
Hmm. And is there an option for looped circuits, or does it have to be an out and back?
At this point, no. With AeroTune, it has to be on back. But a lot of the sensors that are being developed will do looped circuits, because looped circuits are very attractive, because you can just continue to do laps, and it's easier to execute and easier to find the requisite distance too.
Yeah. All right. Where do you think that space is going in the next couple of years, let's say, and where do you hope it's going?
Yeah, I think as I mentioned, there are a couple of hardware items that I'm very excited to see from the likes of SwissSide and AeroTune. Also really curious to see what Mark Graveline's Gizmo ends up doing. I don't know if he's just playing around with it, or if he actually is going to commercialize it at some point. So I think there's so many interesting and very, very smart people working on this problem, and have been working on it for about 10 years. And I think we're quite close to having very good products out there that you can just strap on a bike and not have to worry about your course too much, and go out there and ride and get useful data almost from every ride, which is kind of the dream, so that you don't have to, you know, set it up as a test and go out there and you're testing, right? So you've used a day of training. Something, it might be useful training too, but the whole point of this day was testing. It's the dream is to be able to build your testing into your riding. So even if you don't get live CDA, you know, even if you're not getting that, you know, I moved my head and look, my number dropped by, you know, 0.02 or whatever. Even if you don't get that, if you can incorporate testing into everyday riding, that makes it a much more again, that lowers the barrier to entry because then you don't have to sacrifice a whole day of training in order to do this, in order to do this testing. So that's really what I'm looking forward to. And I do think, as I said earlier, that within the next 12 to 24 months, especially as we're, you know, as supply lines are hopefully easing up a little bit on the electronic side, that we're going to see some really good devices out there.
Yeah,
that can do that.
Let's hope so. Yeah, that sounds very good, and I'm excited for it, and hope that we get to see those developments. If even part of that becomes true in the next couple of years, then that's already exciting.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, is there anything we missed on this topic about aero sensors? Anything else you want to mention, or aero testing in general?
And aero testing in general. I think, Michael, we covered it pretty well. The other option, of course, is, especially in Europe, but increasingly in North America as well, for folks who don't want to learn about it, that's maybe not a generous way of putting it. For people who want to use the services of someone who's already an expert in the field, there are a lot of people out there. So definitely Europe is leading the charge in this. There, you know, the folks at AeroTune are doing aero testing. There's tons of folks in the UK, like Dan Bigham, for example, comes to mind, who's doing a ton of excellent work with some very high level athletes, Martin Topmadsen, folks who are very, very knowledgeable in the aerodynamic space and have excellent tools at their disposal. So if you are, the kind of person who is, you know, motivated by performance and wants to spend a little bit of money, in order to become faster, there are a lot of resources out there. This is something that, I'm going to plug myself here, that we're doing this summer again in quite a small scale, but not nearly to that scale of the folks in Europe, of course. So there are resources available to people who don't necessarily want to buy a sensor or want to learn about it themselves, to hire hire an expert.
Yeah, I would second that recommendation so strongly. I recently went to the Velodrome and did some testing with the no-show, but also backing it up with just Velodrome modeling. That actually with a close friend of mine, but who does these aerodynamic things, and is an expert in that and works with it all the time. Does a PhD in that as well. So anyway, like for me to get the same results and the same learn the things that I learned in 4 hours of testing with him, it would have probably taken me a couple hundred hours to figure it out on my own. And yeah, it's just so worth it. Whether it's aero testing or something else to invest in talking with people that do that and are experts in that area.
Yeah, I mean the parallel is like coaching, right? So there's lots of reasons why, you know, you can learn all the things that a coach knows if you have the time and energy and desire to do it, and or just go straight to the coach. The other thing that we didn't really talk about is, as I said, treat it as an experiment. You go out there and you find what your numbers are, and then even if you do have a number, then what, right? So you could just go through, you know, you could go through different helmets and see which one is fastest. You could go through different skin suits, see which one's fastest. That's a little bit more straightforward. But if you want to kind of make the big deltas, and those all come from changing your position on the bike, right? And of course that all works together. You know, helmets are dependent on position, and kit is dependent on position. So knowing what to do with your position, how to go from where you are now to a position that's still comfortable, still biomechanically efficient, but is aerodynamically more efficient. That again takes some experience, and takes, you know, the people that have done this and have achieved results, they're probably in a better position to get there rather than a trial and error.
No, exactly. That was that my personal experience with the Velodrome testing I did was exactly that. The first day of testing, which was 2 hours, we tested a bunch of equipment things, and all of the test results were exactly what I expected. So yeah, really, it was just confirmation.
No surprises. Yeah.
But the second day of testing was the position testing that we did, and just to even know what to test based on how I looked on the bike and so on. Like that's something that, well, some of the things maybe I would have had a clue of, but some of them were completely new to me. And then to actually do the tests and get actionable information from it and see what changes I could do to positively impact my aerodynamics from the position side of things. That was what helped me improve my aerodynamics, because the equipment changes or equipment testing, it just confirmed what I kind of already knew, even though I hadn't confirmed it.
Yeah. And that's, you make a really excellent point. And I'll kind of piggyback on that and say that there are not a lot of really robust generalizations in positions the influence of positions on aero drag, right? So there's certain things that generally work, but there are very few things that always work. And equipment is the opposite. It's not the same. So for example, we know that a deep wheel, especially in the front, a deep wheel is going to be faster than a shallow wheel. We know that's going to be the case. And that's going to be the case regardless of what your body size is, regardless of your position. It's just going to be faster. A disc wheel is going to be faster than a non-disc wheel. We talked about that when we're talking about tri versus road bike. But in terms of what's going to be faster for an individual in terms of position, that's not always the same. So for example, you know, the mantis position of the hands, right? So the high hands riding position, for more than half of the population, it is faster. But for a non-trivial percentage of the population, mm-hmm. it's slower, right? It's just because of the way that the air flows around their body, right? Our bodies are very differently shaped. Some of us have big legs. Some of us have skinny legs. Some of us have big waists, small waists. You know, women obviously have different morphologies than men. And so it's very difficult to generalize and to say this position will be faster for everybody. And that is why you have to test it, right? And that's why that's the other advantage of aero testing, and the, you know, doubly so when you're being guided by an expert.
No, that's a perfect note to end on, I think. We already did the rapid fire questions in last week's episode. So, for those listeners that might not have heard that, just let us know again, where can people find you and follow you?
Yeah, Michael, thank you again for having me on, and for your listeners who enjoyed this conversation. I also do a podcast called Endurance Innovation with my friend and co-host Andrew Buckrell, and we talk a lot about aerodynamics, as you can probably imagine. All the folks that I've mentioned on the show, we've had as guests. So even if I haven't tried their systems, and of course some of them don't exist yet, they've been guests on our show, so they've had the opportunity to explain their setups. We also spend a bit of time talking about heat transfer, which is another passion of ours. We're both mechanical engineers after all. And then we talk a little bit about training and a little bit about coaching and psychology and pretty much anything that piques our interest in the world of endurance sports. So if you like this conversation, you want to give us a follow, that'd be great. And that's anywhere you get your podcasts, Endurance Innovation. And we also have an Instagram channel, but all I really use that for is to post updates on episodes. But that's also
I'll try to put links in the show notes to the relevant guests, and maybe you can help me find them. But I think most of them I listen to for already, sure. so I kind of know which ones they are. But yeah, I can definitely recommend the podcast. And thank you once again, Michael, for coming on the show and sharing your knowledge about this topic. Really interesting. Much appreciated.
Michael, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for having me on again.
I hope that you enjoyed that interview. And as always, you can find the show notes on scientifictriathlon.com. I have links to a bunch of aero-related episodes here, a lot of them from the Endurance Innovation podcast, but also some of them on the Triathlon show. In total, you have probably 30 hours of aero content in these links, and I've listened to almost all of those episodes, including, of course, the ones on Endurance Innovation, and I know that those episodes are really great. Most of the manufacturers of aerometers have been on the Endurance Innovation podcast, and they are in that list of episodes. So if you're interested in aerodynamics and aero testing, then really take this list and start working your way through it. And I think you'll be incredibly knowledgeable by the end of it. If you want to improve your triathlon performance, or you have specific goals that you want to achieve, then you want to maximize your chance of achieving them, then consider working with a scientific triathlon coach or training plan. Whether you're a beginner or a seasoned veteran, we have options for everybody. So we would love to help you and discuss around if and how we can do that. Find out more and contact us on scientifictriathlon.com, and we can continue discussing from there. Next Monday on the podcast, we have Dr. Philip Larsen from the Swedish School of Sport and Health Sciences, and we'll discuss topics on the intersection of cell biology and applied physiology, like cellular responses to high-intensity interval training, overload periods, and much, much more. It will be sciencey, but we will also have try to have a lot of applied takeaways. So make sure you are subscribed to the podcast so that you don't miss it. I think that will be an exciting one. Finally, big thanks to our sponsors, Precision Fuel and Hydration, that you can find on precisionfuelandhydration.com. Use their free online sweat test and quick carb calculator to understand your fluid, electrolyte, and carbohydrate needs and individualize your plan. And book a free video consultation with the team to refine your strategy. Use the code TTS22 22 at checkout for 15% off your first order of fueling and hydration products. And thank you to Zen8. Use the Zen8 swim trainer to improve your technique, power, stamina, and most importantly, your swim training consistency. Get 20% off your order on the swim trainer with the promo code that you can get on zen8swimtrainer.com/TTS. And don't forget that it's a risk-free investment. If you don't love it after 2 weeks, send it back and you'll get a full refund. Thank you, as always, for listening. Keep training smart and keep loving triathlon.